is Sam Wong from our office, because this is not something that I know as well as you or he. But I will tell you, just so you have background, because everybody is kind of plugged into the government process, although I really want to say there are a lot of people in this audience and elsewhere who've been participating in our technology and government committee for the last 7 years. And you should know that it's a funny topic, technology and government, because most people don't know what you're talking about. So, like, if you have a housing topic, you have a huge turnout. You have parents who are interested in education, in the education committee, a huge turnout. But there have been a group of you here in this room and elsewhere who have come religiously to the technology committee meetings. And I want to say thank you, because it helps me, because then we can say this is important. And the other good news is that the DOIT, which is the Department of Information Technology and Telecommunications, headed up by Paul Cosway, is also a good department in the sense that they are trying to be innovative. Of course, it's very interesting. You know, if you're in government and you're working for any administration, you do tend to keep things in-house. And so the fact is that this committee, we've tried really hard to make sure the public is part of the discussion. And that's what I think this bill is all about, is the public. So on Monday, just to give you some background, you know, there are 51 members of the City Council. The City Council of New York passes the budget. It obviously works on land use, which is, I think, very important to this topic. And it works on legislation, just like any other government body. And of course, we help constituents. So I think this particular piece of legislation will help us with this issue of, it's obviously a legislation, but it'll help us with land use, and I think it'll help us with planning in the future. We do have a hearing on Monday at 1 o'clock at City Hall. You're all welcome to attend. There will be, this bill will come up. Everybody's welcome to testify. There'll be somebody there from the administration. And then probably what will happen is it won't pass, because you have to have a hearing. But I hope that in July, when we have a full City Council meeting at the end of the month, I'm not sure, there's only one meeting in July and one meeting in August and the summer, I'm hoping that we'll be able to have a quick technology committee meeting and then it'll pass during the summer. The reason I'm hopeful, and some of you know this, is Andrew Roche, whom I think most of you know, is having the Public Democracy Conference on Monday and Tuesday, this coming week. I imagine many of you are going. And it's my understanding, because you know Andrew, he loves press. And he loves to talk about what he's doing. And I love Andrew, but it's about press. Am I right? Andrew is so a good friend of many of ours. But he's telling everybody what the mayor's going to say. I have no idea what the mayor's going to say. But Andrew tells me the mayor is going to say, if there's somebody here from the administration, he's going to correct me, or is that he's going to be supportive of the concept of open data. However, the devil is in the details. And the question is always, how far do you go? We like to go as far as possible with the public. I just want to say, in terms of background, the reason I love chairing this committee is because I believe that government information should be public. It's supposed to be, but saying it and doing it are two different things. So actually, 2003, we passed Local Law 11, which seems like 100 years ago in technology and political years. And that basically says that every official report that the city produces could be on homelessness, it could be on CompStat, it could be on issues of housing. There are many official reports that the city produces, the budget being the most obvious, but there are lots of other ones, has to go up on the site of the municipal archives, also known as the Department of Records. I would say half, maybe, of the agencies comply. And so it doesn't have the raw data that you're interested in. This is another whole step. But I just want you to know that we have a history of trying to get data to be public. The other thing we know is that in other cities, there is an effort to do what we're doing, but it's our impression, and some of you from around the country know better than we do, that nobody has done it legislatively. And I think, I know Noel and I were in, some of you also might have been in the tent in Denver, and this specific issue may not have come off, and certainly that was an example of a president who understands, because of the interest in technology, of what we're trying to do. So, it's always hard to define public records, but I think that we have tried to do it in a way that talks about all different kinds of public records. There are certainly the ones that come to the city council. The one that I am most interested in, which you have never heard of, but I think this would cover, is an environmental impact statement, EIS. There is so much data. When you build a building that will create traffic, will have to go through zoning, will have to be perhaps taller than what the zoning allows, you have to create, as a developer, an EIS. You probably never heard of it. You can't imagine how much data is in that EIS. Traffic studies, sewage studies, air quality studies, number of children in the school studies and how it impacts, etc. So one of the issues that I would love to include is all those EISs. Well, basically, any report that you can think of will be covered by this bill. One of the other issues that's incredibly important is how you decide what the standards will be to plan, develop, establish, and coordinate the standards that will be providing that raw data. And I understand that there are, and you know better than I, there are common and accessible formats, CSV, XML, KML, and SHP, all of which you know the languages better than I. But this bill makes sure that when the data is produced, that it's in a format that will enable us to compare federal government, other cities around the world. So that's, I think that's incredibly important. I think the other aspect of it, to the best of my knowledge, this issue of raw data is very hard to get. If you're a reporter now, I think one of your most interesting agencies is the police department. Now, if anybody here from the police department, I'm going to be in trouble. But I can tell you that that data is the hardest to come by. You often have reporters having to foil. And I think actually one of the good news about this bill from the government's perspective is it might help them decrease the amount of time they have to put into freedom of information law requests. You may not know this unless you're an agency, but there's a great deal of time that goes into the legal staff, usually an intern that has to do it, to be honest with you, that gets the foiled information and gets it out to the person who's requested it. There are some people who just, they're a little crazy, and I know a lot of them, they just foil everything all the time, and they need to be answered. So if the raw data is up there, then the agency does not have to provide the FOIL. I think that's good at cutting down staff time within government. I would say that, so the raw data is, I mean, just example would be, one of the questions that I get a lot is frisk. You know, if you're African American, you always feel that you are getting frisked, stopped more often than any other race. And the question would be to see the raw data to see what's true and not true. The whole issue of police, guns, not guns, arrest records, etc. That is something that is constantly being asked for, certainly by people I know, and I think that would be a good example of where the raw data. The issue of updating is incredibly important, and I think we will spell out in the bill how that needs to happen. In general, it's my experience that government websites, unfortunately, certainly nonprofit websites, unfortunately, may not be as updated in a way that is comparable to some of the private sites where you're trying to sell something, and therefore you really have to be more in tune. So this actually mandates updating procedures. The other issue, which is great for the public, is it available without registration requirement, license requirement, or restriction on use. And of course, the issue here is that many times when you're foiling, you have to have a certain knowledge. If you're in the buildings department, I don't know how many of you have been to the BIS site of the buildings department. It's a very good site. But to be honest with you, you still need to go with an expediter sometimes. You need to have somebody translate it if you're not that sophisticated about how to get that data. So this way it enables you to manipulate the data without having to be a registered contractor or some kind of real estate agent who really understands the and of course, it will be presented and structured in a format that permits automated processing. I would say that those are some of the general aspects of the bill. I can say that it will probably go further than what the mayor suggests. I'm excited about it, and so therefore we'll need a lot of support. Now, I might be wrong, the mayor might say we love this is fabulous, but there's a lot of time and effort, and it does go further than what other cities are doing with their promulgating a regulation or policy. So therefore, and this is a big city, so therefore I have a sort of gut reaction, that we will need your support to say, this bill needs to go to this length, because, and then you could make up your reason, how you do your research and what you think is relevant. The final thing I want to say is that the mapping, I'm going to love the GIS aspect. Now, you may not know this guy named Al Leisner. He's like the father of base maps. He was the technology director for the Department of Environmental Protection when I started working and building the first city website, say in like 1989, 1990. He was the one when 9/11, lives right near me, so I know this, when 9/11 happened, we were the only city really, because when Katrina happened, New Orleans had nothing, to really have a base map. You need to have a base map to be able to know not just where ground zero challenges are and what's underneath and what's above and what's around, but obviously those, you know better than I, the importance of a base map. You'd be surprised at that time, 2001, how many cities did not have a base map. Anyway, so we've had many, many hearings on what the GIS folks doing GIS need in order to enhance that base map. And what happens is the city has a lot of this data that you'll have, but, and they have it in a format that they can use it. But now you'll have it in a format that you can use it. And that's a really big step. Because I can tell you, like, just example, 2001, one of his biggest challenges, you wouldn't believe this, was SOCs. What are you talking about, SOCs? Yeah. Soap, socks, S-O-C-K-S, those things you put on your feet. And the problem was, every community in the city, and in the country, and in the world, was sending socks to the world. I'm talking, trucks were coming in, clothing and socks, and things that really we didn't need. And the trouble is somebody had to keep track of them. So that his base map, plus the GIS, was able, with the city data, to more or less keep track of some of these, I call them socks, but it was all this other stuff. So we really didn't need, but somebody was doing a good thing and you had to keep track of it. So this base map will now be able to be something that you can use, not just the folks in the city internally. So that's my, Sam, you want to add something? Go ahead.
I just want to provide a packet that I just passed out. Layout. So we have media alerts inside, so just to give you a general overview. And then we also have on the second third page, it's a letter that we send out to all of our elected officials, especially city council members. We fax them, we email them, we also mail it out to them to invite them to come to our hearing and ask them to sign on to this bill. And the last two pages is the introduction 991. So you can look over that and see what details we are trying to look over on Monday, and also details of compliance rules and also the deadline of which agency and how many agencies should comply in 2011, 2013. The latest each agency should comply is around 2013, but most agencies, especially after January 4, 2010, must comply and have XML data or any of the data that Gail listed before as immediate, which was done by 2010.
So we have to start having a strategy plan January. That's cool.
Yeah.
Or you could ask questions, because really, yeah. I'm doing the best I can here. I don't know how well I'm doing. Go ahead.
Can you talk a bit more about, I mean, you're talking about compliance, right? Which really seems to be the nut of the matter. I mean, from what you've described, what you're sketching out as a way of issuing publicly structured available data seems to be really aggressive. Right? So, what is it going to mean in terms of actually getting, you know, some of these agencies that are probably still working out of file cabinets to, you know, structure all their data in terms of build the taxonomies, do everything that's necessary. What problems do you, in a worst, best case scenario where, you know, this thing passes 51-0, everyone loves it, in terms of actually implementing it and making it happen?
There are two issues. First of all, and that was my question when we looked at the bill. I mean, the issue is with Local Law 11, which I know to you seems like it's ancient history, but is it just a report and not the raw data and so on? it's hard to just, you can't like find an agency, you know, you can't tell, can't find the fire department if they're not putting their report online. I would suggest, and I would say the legacy systems, which is sort of what you're talking about, are probably with the bigger agencies less than you think. Now, let me be specific. However, compliance is another problem. The reason I think is in the last year, with this, if there's any silver lining to the budget crisis, it's that collaboration has to take place. Right? So we don't need three different data. I don't know how many data warehouses at HRA. Human resource, I don't want to know. So, and I know that I think DEP, Environmental Protection, has got a pretty big legacy system to do it. Has done a lot more centralization, where they have been sort of taking over some of the technology departments of different agencies, particularly the smaller ones, you know, like Landmarks Preservation Commission, which had nothing online. They didn't, if you for those of us who depend on information in order to make decisions, you didn't even know if a building had come up, you didn't know if it had been landmarked, you didn't know the status, you didn't know anything. So I would say that by January, I really believe this. I don't want to talk about the police department because they're the whole world. But for the other agencies, because the police department is a world unto itself. But for the other agencies, they're sophisticated, they want to share nothing. But for the other agencies, I would say that they will be able to have a pretty good strategy by January of next year. The problem is going to be, and they have now, that's why you have a somewhat long phase in, which, you know, like 2012 sounds like a long time, 2013. It'll take some of the bigger agencies with some legacy systems that time to do what you're doing. The only thing I worry about is 10 years from now, say, I worry that there's full compliance. In other words, what's the penalty if you don't do it? So I think that's one of the issues that will come up in the hearing. I just say, I don't quite know. Now, the one way you do it is, you know, to be honest with you, the Office of Management and Budget runs the city. You can pretend it's the mayor, you can pretend it's this, it's really OMB. So, I mean, it could be some discussion. If you don't comply, then there will be this withheld. You know, it could be like money situation. I don't know. Compliance is a problem. I'm not going to deny it. You know too much already. Go ahead.
I can wait till tomorrow.
Go ahead.
In terms of possible fine structure, you could create a statute. In New York State, you have to pay 25 cents.
Why don't you introduce yourself? You don't know who you are. Go ahead.
I'm Benjamin Kalos. I'm a policy director for Mark Green, who's a candidate for public advocate, and I created openlegislation.org to put the state Senate and Assembly votes online. Right now, you have to pay 25 cents per paper page. So
for the foil,
which is what exists as opposed to this. So what could be done is perhaps saying, if you do not have an alternative electronic copy, which would normally be provided for free, you may not charge the 25 cents. And that is a de facto fine because now they don't get reimbursed.
My name is Misha Bizinski and I work in the XML area. I have a question about what it means, the standardization. My question is this, I mean, when you say, well, we're gonna put everything in XML, there are two ways to do it. One way is to say, okay, we take Word, we export everything in XML. But the gain is basically nothing. It's just another Word format. However, there's another way to do it, is to structure everything in with a meaningful tag so that you can actually navigate. So the question is, what kind of, would that be enough with the compliance to say, if it's XML, we don't care what it is, what kind of
what
XML?
What do you think we should do?
It's a delicate question because it may mean if you do it very precisely, it may be very costly, very big cost.
Yeah.
So it's something that needs to be discussed.
Yes.
I think
that's the purpose of the hearing. Is to have your input, everybody's input, because this is sort of cutting new ground to be covered. And what I don't want is something that we put all this effort into and it can't be manipulated by the public in a positive way. It can't be used by researchers.
Right.
So I do think that this is the kind of discussion that we need to have.
Just want to put it out there that you can submit a written testimony. You don't have to attend Monday, but submit a written testimony to the CD record.
Yeah.
Is there a deadline for that?
If possible, Monday.
Yeah, but you can do it after that.
Yeah.
It'll, I'd say about a month. It'll take us a little bit.
Hi.
Yes, Tom, go ahead.
Jay Salzberger, I'd like to speak to this issue of the formats. I'm a free software. I used to do a lot of propaganda, some propaganda in favor of free software.
We have no idea.
I don't do much anymore due to age and incompetence. But the issue of formats is closely connected with the issue of the licensing of the software that writes the actual thing that's presented on the net. And this may sound crazy, but if the software you use to produce the things that people can access is source secret, that is to say, has a restrictive copyright license on the software used to produce the document, then indeed, this will further lock in. It will prevent people who use other operating systems from being able to manipulate the data. And this is actually a serious problem. Word documents, for example, are utterly impenetrable. And by the way, one need not postulate that Microsoft is particularly evil. They're not. It flows simply from the fact that you are legally prevented from repairing their software. Therefore, if this is to succeed long term, scale 5 years, I suggest you take very seriously the idea of using free software to produce the stuff so you can hire people to improve it. And if there's something wrong with it, so somebody's written something that worked until last month and there's a change in the format, you should be able to repair it without going to Microsoft and begging them. Microsoft will say, oh, we have something that fits in our browser that can read it, but if you run GNU Linux or the Mac, maybe we'll make something for you. No. It should be free software. Only free software can defend open standards. Sorry.
Thank you.
I was wondering if there's any stipulations in the bill in terms of the time limit of the data. So for instance, even if it gets out in a great format, it might be that the data is not very useful if it's always lagging a year behind, or even some data a couple months behind.
There's two issues there. First of all, I think that's something to consider, and we should. I can tell you that when you're like doing, how many people have been to City Hall? Okay. So when you're at hearings, there is at every single hearing on any topic, and we have 40 committees. So the fourth largest, our budget is $60 billion, and we're the fourth largest budget in the United States. Federal government, state of California, the state of New York, and then New York City. Bigger than all the other states and half the countries in the world. Just so you understand. It's huge. So at every single hearing on any single bill, there's a very thorough compilation of material as part of the briefing report, just like you have in Congress. What's interesting, often, just to give you an example, I happen to sit on the general welfare. I care very much about the safety net in our city for homeless and families and so on. And often, the family numbers may be up to date, but there's often data that is a year old, because that's all we can get. So I would say that, you might find that that's all that's available, but I think that's something to look at. In other words, it may not be, even on the raw sense, up to date, but I think it's something to look at. Because even when you do the briefing reports, sometimes you don't have up to date information. Yes?
I'm interested in the, actually,
your name?
Tim Huang.
Hi, Tim.
From the Berkman Center. I was actually interested, you mentioned the economic downturn aspect of it. Have you guys estimated what the cost of
No, it's a good idea. There will be, when we do the hearing, I don't know if it'll be on Monday, but it's always, whenever we pass something, particularly, some kind of financial analysis of the savings or the cost. And, I just happen to have worked in an administration myself some years ago, one of the mayors, not Giuliani. And I was, we were always looking at that issue, and we were foiled. So it's just something that I think might help. I don't think this is a big savings. It is interesting on technology in general, because you hear the public thinks, you save money. Actually, it's not a big cost savings on the short term, because there's always a big outlay, and this will be an outlay in the beginning. But I think long term, if people are requesting less information, and not calling 311 for this kind of basic information, and not FOIA. I think it might help. But down here, we'll come back,
Blue Kleppner. I was wondering
we have no idea who you are. He's one of the great people who does come to the hearings.
I've been a regular follower.
Yes, he is. We appreciate it. So your haircut. Did you get it?
I did.
It looks good, Lou.
I was wondering if the Department of City Planning records, which are currently available through a commercial license, and the City of Finance archivist.
Yeah, yeah, definitely finance. This is what I know. I'm going to find out. I know this is a problem. There are, we don't know about DOE, because don't forget DOE is a state agency still, even whatever's in Albany, it's still state. The second issue is it will not include the Housing Authority, because the Housing Authority is a federal agency and has its own board. And it will not include, what upsets me, Economic Development Corporation, because EDC has a huge amount of data. They are what we call a semi-quasi, you know, they're like a public-private partnership, because they do deals, and then the deals go back, and the revenue goes back into EDC. I assume that the Superintendent of CPC is GAC, because that is a mayoral agency. But I don't know by Monday at 1 o'clock. DOE is still a question mark.
I was wondering about Department of City Planning and Department of Finance.
Finance, yes. There's no question about that.
Because they commercially license now, so it could be expected if this legislation passed.
That they would not be commercial, and you could just get it for
January 1st.
That would be my impression, but we'll check.
Okay, I'll check on that.
Yeah. Good question. Yes.
Craig Newmark.
Oh my God. It's so exciting. You're not so vocal, so that's why I didn't recognize you.
Thank you for coming.
It's really scary to have you here, but it's an honor.
Thank you. Don't encourage me to believe my own press.
We love you.
Well, I love you too.
We really do. Every time there's something in it, I think just how do you schedule it? Go ahead.
I'll be on my guard. In terms of media strategy and so on, how can we help? I'm guessing that here, but also in a lot of other places, this is spreading through the country.
Yes.
The easy part, comparatively, is the technology.
Yes.
And that pains me to say that as a nerd. Although, as the president goes, but the idea that persuading people, trying to look out for different political sensitivities, creating an emotional momentum. How do you do that?
Well, I think the good news here is that it's my impression that the administration in New York, the Bloomberg administration, is not going to oppose it. The only issue is you don't want something in New York that is so watered down that it's not helpful to the public. And so I think we have to see the administration will testify first on Monday. I haven't gotten any sense from them what their position is. So the question, in other words, they're generally for it, but if they, you want to make sure it doesn't get watered down. So I think that's the public hope here. Or if you think there are other ways that the bill should be strengthened, let us know.
I assume that's before pontificating publicly on issues which could be emotional, like relating to apartments and housing.
Well, yeah, I heard those.
One should go, let's say, to folks regarding anything that could involve consumer affairs, or the Department of State.
Yes.
So, for example, I shouldn't say it with a camera right on me.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
But I would say that the issue for us, probably with the city, is the cost. The biggest issue right now is everything that costs money. So the question would be, to me, if it has to cost something, because otherwise you're not going to have the detail that's helpful to the public. So the question here is, we want to get what we need in order to make it useful, and I don't know yet what the cost would be. That was something that would be worked out in the next month or so. Go ahead.
Zero cost is a good one. Well, and again,
but we may not get it wrong. We want to get, if it's going to cost something to do this, to do it right. Because that was Toby's question over there. Go ahead.
Let's say I hear that apartment finding and issues are an issue here.
Okay, you've heard more than I, so I'm glad to hear that, because he's likely to hear things that I'm not likely to hear.
You don't want to know?
No, I don't know. That would be coming under Housing Preservation and Development. I can't think of which agency. We'll have to think of which agency that would fall under. Consumer Affairs, Department of
CCA.
HPD. CCA. Okay. All right, we'll work on it. We'll tell Mr. Mitch that we want him to do what we want. Go ahead.
So the cost is really only half of it, right, in terms of trying to sell it to the administration. But the other side of it is the value that's produced by opening up the data, and essentially then the useful applications or the city services that end up being provided then by citizens or nonprofits or private organizations because they now have access to this. So if there's some way to reasonably quantify some of that value, it would be gained. It seems like that would be a good way to
do it.
It's a carrot instead of a stick.
Yes. Any other suggestions, ideas? Yes.
My name is Jonathan Berger. I'm a concerned citizen.
Great.
It seems that you guys are already quite aware that things change, and in 3 years, the technological landscape and the implementation will be very different. I'm curious as to what provisions in the planning there are for regular institutionalized check-ins to look back, see how things are working, and how we can adjust course.
I mean, I think, first of all, it's going to take about 3 years to get this thing fully operational. I hate to say it, but it never goes as quickly as it's supposed to. And I think that 3 years can be very different. You know, they're not only technologically, but you don't know which agencies, which issues. I suppose the format can be very different. People's, you know, how the speeds work can be very different. How people access information much more on a PDA than a, you know, PC and so on and so forth. So I think that, you know, we'll try to build that in. Sometimes you need new legislation. I don't know if it would come to that. I don't know if
actually, it's built into legislation that it will follow to the guidelines of the W3C. So if it changes, we will change at the same time. I think that's under definitions of technical standards.
But are there explicit provisions and calls for reassessment without necessarily sunsetting and putting the program in jeopardy of not being renewed, but to say that, look back and take
the
question.
There isn't anything now, but it's sort of like when you do a program that helps, you know, abuse children, you want to know when you do an evaluation to see if it actually works. And we certainly want to do that here to see if it's getting to people in a form that's helpful to them, and what that can be very different in 3 years. I would suggest that. Somebody else has to add something to this. What do people think would be the kind of data that you'll be looking for? Is there some agency besides Department of Consumer Affairs and Housing Preservation and Development that you're looking for data-wise that would be helpful? Yes.
Not on my own behalf, but on Andrew Shea and OpenNYC. I think there's even an Open 311 code sprint here today. And along with one of the gentleman's arguments, instead of this, and this again is not my point, but it's somebody else's, instead of the speaker spending $1 million developing a 311 application for every single phone that she has proposed, if she created Open 311, just made the data freely available, it would save the city several $1 million. And instead of having to wonder where that maple syrup smell is coming from until it came up on the news, you could open up Open 311 and be like, oh, 10,000 people complained about this. And it would also reduce the burden on 311.
I live in Greenpoint, so one of the most polluted, if not the most polluted, neighborhood in America. I would love to have environmental data readily accessible. I know that it's been a hard struggle to get the corporations who are trying to mitigate the oil cleanup, but I think that would help in all of the legal cases that are currently going on within Greenpoint.
So I guess building off the 311 data, the council staff data underlying, and this went into effect, this is running every, I think at this point it's every council member's office.
No, I didn't sign up because I just want someone to put me in my database. Don't tell anybody.
And the sharing of data within boroughs or citywide within the city government, but there's no public access to this. It's just a percentage of complaints, noise complaints distributed by boroughs. It's very
You mentioned that the police department is kind of a different world. I'd like to hear a little bit about when that world might come in compliance with the rest of the world.
I mean, just something simple. Tell me if I'm wrong, but if you make a complaint as a citizen, say, like my brother was visiting, somebody broke into the car. There was nothing there, but, you know, he had a Massachusetts plate, so they, you know, people love to break in when they see another license plate. And so I told him he had to go to the police department to make a complaint for the insurance purposes. you know, actually he was leaving that minute, he had four kids, you know, they had to get out of there. He had to come all the way back to New York in order to go to the police department to make that complaint. You cannot do it online. It's insane. And so that just, then they won't change it for whatever reason. They will not change that. So I don't know if it's because you want to have a police personnel there or what, but that would be, so in other words, what they have online, what they don't have online, and what they consider security and not security. And then this notion of not sharing, to get the police department to work with the fire department to do what we call PSAC 2, which is the coordination at Metro Center in Brooklyn, you know, where you're not like calling 911, then you get a 911 operator, then goes to a dispatcher, then goes to the fire department. That's the civil version. So trying to get those two departments to work together, it wasn't a technology issue, it was a culture issue. So I would just say in general, the police department is just tough to get them to collaborate. And this is a collaboration project, you know, if you're gonna do it, yes, go ahead.
Another thing that I've been trying to, that we've seen in certain pockets of the communities is community farms and how that, who, and I know that that's taken care of by Parks and Recreation, but I know that also sewage maintains the trash, and there's a lot of refuge that isn't being recycled, and that there could be a better opportunity to kind of to distribute process of biodegradable stuff within the Park Service. So trying to figure out like exactly how much tonnage is being collected by the sewage department, and how much we could offset that to go into the community farms.
But what would DCA be? That would be the complaint that had come in regarding advertising for real estate?
I brushed up against them. We were talking about apartment brokers who would advertise deceptively. I think at one point they sent out a wave of subpoenas. I don't know if it got anywhere, but if the cultural and also legitimate reasons for reporting online could be fixed,
yeah,
that could be useful.
Well,
again, there are some privacy issues, some legitimate ones, but if you could look up an agent or brokerage and see what their record was,
mm-hmm,
that would be useful. Now, there may be city ordinances or state ones or something which says you can't do that, and that may or may not be fixable. Otherwise, you can get private organizations to do things and have them take on the liability. Like maybe Yelp would love to do it, I'm sure.
Any other data people would like to get a hold of? Yes.
Yeah,
from
the
MGA. That's the state. See, that's the state. MGA is the state agency. You'd be surprised at what state people think of as city, but it's unfortunately state. I don't think we can do too much on the state government right now. They have a few issues.
What about street construction?
Street, I'm sorry?
Construction.
Not in a big way, that day.
Well, Dan, where are you? There. Dan and I had an awesome meeting with the Brooklyn Transportation Alternatives that had the gentleman who was in charge of bike facilities within Brooklyn. And one of the things that it would be great, and I know that DOT has done already a good faith effort of mapping out the bike racks, but getting more information from the Department of Transportation. And there was
in general
because there was for a while the northern side of the Williamsburg Bridge was closed off, and there was no announcement of when that side of the bridge would reopen, and that's it has a less steep incline than the south side of the bridge.
Right.
And just getting more data and more information that's coming out so that we can, as bicyclists who go over the bridge, you don't want to pay the MTA.
I think the street issue is interesting because, you know, Con Ed is not a city agency, but one of the issues that people want to know is, you know, your street is just repaved. And then the next day, I swear to God,
yeah,
you know, somebody comes along, it could be the phone company, it could be Con Ed, it could be somebody, you know, putting down cable or something else, and the street's torn up. And sometimes the agencies don't know this. See, DOT has tried really hard to make more collaboration so that if Con Ed is doing some kind of a repair, that the phone company comes in and looks too, so that, or Department of Environmental Protection with the water, so that, you know, you don't, like, start all over the next week, and so on and so forth. But, yeah, I mean, I think that something down the line would be to try to get some of these other agencies, like the MTA, like Con Ed, which is like an agency, even though it's a utility, to collaborate with the state. That would be good for residents as well as just coordination amongst cities. Yes, go ahead.
I've been looking a lot into the running of cable in the street.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say another piece of data that would be very useful would be the street repaving, resurfacing schedule.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
And plans, several months, several years out. The DOT will protect certain streets after they've paved it to prevent other utilities or telecommunications companies from opening that street.
But if there's an emergency, they
which is just a break. There's no opportunity to coordinate. Well, if you're going to repave this in 6 months, we'll do work there now,
right.
So that it, when you repave it, it's all good.
I mean, I think DOT does some of that internally. I think it would be nice for the public to know.
My name is Mark. I'm with ICB in Brandon. In terms of knowing information that might be interesting to your constituents and people here, I'm wondering if you've talked to companies that operate in this hyper-local information space. There's a bunch of startups that aggregate information, every block, outside in, companies like that have, and maybe we'll speak together more about it as well, but people sign up for certain pieces of information and so they're probably in a great position to give you insight as to what data that the city, that people are interested in learning more about.
Well, what would be an example? I know PropertyShark.com, right? They're very, they collect, what kind of, they collect selling things, right? Government information, and then they sell it.
They have Zillow have a lot of information, but I don't know where it comes from.
Database, the city database, it's unbelievable.
They have a lot of good stuff.
In this sphere, if you want the people who know the stuff, that's Sun Life Foundation,
okay.
And
that's
Sun Life Labs.
That's the kind of people you're talking about? Okay.
And Ellen Miller, their ED, will be in town
I know.
Probably late tomorrow.
But I think that's
she's
a good
not
idea.
Very scary.
If you have some ideas about people who should contact, will you let
yeah.
us know?
Sure.
Okay. Yes.
I'm Andrew Hoppen, the State Senate CIO. So we are in trouble.
We're excited
right now.
About your book. Everybody's talking about it.
Duly embarrassed, but he does all the real work. So I think the key thing is openness and coordination, and that's mostly what I'll be talking about on Monday. So, and I think that's relevant to the compliance process. If you can really know how each agency is doing in its compliance process as you go into this, that's going to be a good sort of shame and potential enabler of carrots and sticks that don't just have to come from within government. And also it's important, I think, because if you make that process open, those agencies will learn from each other. I don't know if you do it. You envision really being the sort of strategist
for
all
this? They say that they will. You never know until it actually happens. I mean,
okay.
as long as the mayor's on board, we'll have to, whoever's going to see him on Monday morning at what we call Andrew's Conference. I don't know the name for this conference.
Yeah.
I know it's Andrew's
Conference.
Yeah, Andrew's Conference. Andrew's Conference. I mean, if you have whoever's there and he takes questions, people should ask him.
Right.
I mean, I think that would be interesting.
But anyway, the final point about coordination, I guess, is if you make sure that the whole process of figuring out how to do this is really open, then you're going to enable us at the state level, folks at the federal level, other cities who are your peers and are trying to solve the same challenges to weigh in on that and to learn from that and potentially to contribute to that. And that ultimately means that the total value out of doing this gets maximized as we do it. So.
Great. That's
helpful.
Yes.
I'm sorry
I
was late, so I don't know what you were mentioning.
Well, right ahead.
Restaurant hygiene. Results.
We mentioned it in the press release, but you're absolutely right.
LA actually has a great program where they post them sprays for the restaurants in the window of the restaurant itself. It's been tremendously effective in terms of diminishing the number of foodborne illness reports in the local hospital. So I would encourage you to also think about not only putting it on a website, but using it as a first stage to putting it out in the community where people are making decisions, that will affect criminal activity in a neighborhood, muggings, and all that sort of thing.
And then CompStat. So the thing about CompStat, which is hard though, is that you need to break it down. That's why I think this would be exciting and then open, because people hear grand larceny. That's like leaving your pocketbook at Starbucks and going to the bathroom. I don't know who does that. Nobody will do it. But, people do it. They leave their laptop and then they go to the bathroom in Starbucks and then they don't know why it's not there when they come back.
So you need clarity.
So you need to know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So I hope that we would like that to be part of it. Because grand larceny, I think most New Yorkers have no idea what that means.
Right. And then the third category would be traffic incidents.
Okay.
You know, drive-bys or places, and maybe to think about pushing that information out to intersections that are particularly dangerous, so that pedestrians can be aware if there have been a number of fatalities in that area.
And that's a great idea, because that's the social, you know, again, the great exciting part of this, in my opinion, is that the internal DOT and PD know about traffic accidents. But here you are, a citizen, you see that there are near misses all the time, you know, because you live here. And then you want a stop sign or lights. What you have to do now is you contact 311, or you contact Gail Brooks, whatever it does. But you normally contact 311. And then eventually the DOT sends an inspector out to review the corner, right? And then about 6 months later, you get a letter that you have a stop sign or you don't have a stop sign. You have no idea the interim. You have no idea, maybe you're crazy, maybe there are no near misses, etc. So that's why it would be really, it would just empower the, obviously the researcher, but you're right, the citizen too. Yes.
The point that you just made about the jargon, so the big piece of feedback that Adrian from Everblock, what he had about Chicago was the same thing. Not only is it like grand larceny, but it may be like F423.
Right.
So having like a common nomenclature that's citizen readable, is, and having that standardized so that everyone's using, not having to create that for each application, would be a huge.
I think you're right about it. But the city has a whole vocabulary unto itself, and it needs to be broken down. That makes absolute sense. Yes.
And I think within the context of like reports that don't necessarily have to be given through the NYPD, is like incident reports with the TLC that's supposed to be monitoring all the different cabs or delivery cabs that are out in the outer boroughs, the community cars, because while not every incident is necessarily brought into the NYPD, it would be great that I know that when I'm out in out of Brooklyn, I can have an iPhone app that actually is aggregating all the different incident reports on the different car services.
Yes. Going back here.
In an earlier session, Peter was talking about an open API that was added to the 311 system in Washington, D.C., and I don't think that exists in New York City's 311 system yet. An API, an application programming interface. For the 311 system. They've implemented in Washington, D.C. They say it's very successful. It gives people a way to have little iPhone apps that report problems. And we've had a successful 311 here in New York City.
I think that my understanding is that Dude is working on that. I think it was, there was some, I don't know what was taking them so long. I don't know how much was legacy, how much was Dude. There are two issues with 311. The issue is, you obviously can call it. It drives me crazy. I can't listen to, you are not able to park your car today and the sun is shining and if you are, it drives me nuts. But I know it exists. What I would like to do is, not only if I call in, I want to know what happened to my complaint. Right now you don't really know. And the second problem is, I want to be able to email in or text in and not have to call in and listen to everything. And then I want to know what happened to my complaint also, and the status of it.
Right.
All of that is supposedly slowly moving out of the way.
With the addition of an API,
developers
can do really even better things, where I could say, oh, this billboard is in violation, and send it right in, rather than have to figure out the right email for the system.
Good point. Okay. Thanks for doing that. Yes, go ahead.
Do you have data about the noise level mapped noise? Or?
I hate noise problems. Yes, in other words, the Department of Environmental Protection is the agency that sends out the noise inspectors. Sometimes the police department, they're supposed to have a noise reader in each precinct posted. So I would say the DEP is the main agency that works on this. The new legislation changed the way in which noise is evaluated. In other words, all the time, people call me, the HVAC system in the new restaurant's making a lot of noise. Well, what it turns out is that they have not one, but two HVAC systems. And now actually that noise can be considered, the two of them together, or the one can be considered noise. It used to be separately. You have no idea how many people would complain. So there are many changes. No changes are incorporated. They are being monitored and people are being penalized. So yes, noise would be part of this data.
Okay.
but I'm saying that the noise issues are changing. I think it's actually the number one complaint, the 311, is noise. Construction noise, jackhammer noise, HVAC system noise, car honking noise, bar noise. I'm still sick of noise, you have no idea. Go ahead.
There's a great illustration as to how some people are using that with a thing in the UK called Fix My Street.
Okay.
Have you heard it all? If you see that, you're going to love it. It's
okay.
The map.
No one?
Yeah, sorry.
And the iPhone variables.
Yeah, they have an iPhone one for reporting potholes.
Okay.
Can I just add for all the use case, Tesla's in mindsociety.org, that's where you find all those applications. It's very similar to that.
Fixed resources housing to refugees and immigrant communities, and especially open translation.
Speed up your screen.
Good process that I'm curious about other information.
Well, the immigrants, yes, I think that would be something. Let me give you an example. In the city of New York, we passed legislation on the huge issue of language assistance. I don't know if you've ever been in a hospital with somebody who doesn't speak English and they are seriously ill, and it is certainly possible to have a horrible situation if the physician does something wrong because there's no communication. So at the Health and Hospital Corporation, there are 11 city campuses of HHC. I'm not talking about the voluntary, but language assistance is mandated now. It is also mandated in the public assistance centers. If, for instance, in Queens, in communities that Jackson Heights where Urdu is spoken, if there are 25 clients in a public assistance office who speak Urdu, then Urdu is mandated in that office. So there's, and it's not just language lines, there are more sophisticated methods. In some cases, it's a real person. In some cases, there is a much more sophisticated than just the language line. So, and of course, 311 has, I don't know how many languages that they say they have, but they say they have a lot. That should be monitored. That would be something that could be listed. And I think that would be a very, the other issue, of course, for the immigrant community is the small number, considering the waiting list, of English as a second language classes. You can't imagine, if you want to see a waiting list, it's not just for getting into affordable housing, it's to get into an ESL class. And that would be another, I think, good statistic. Some of these are run by nonprofits, but pretty much funded by the city. So that would be another whole discussion about the nonprofit community and how they get pulled into this statistical analysis. I don't think it's part of the bill, so that would be a next generation. You should know that the 311 now, you may not know this, also includes human services. So the 311A or A or something. And basically, the human services council, which is both all the human service agencies that belong to it. And instead of, if you call with an immigration problem, it used to be you went to the New York City Department of Immigrant Services, which doesn't really help you. You want to go to the New York Coalition, you want to go to, you know, a settlement house or something that really can help your neighborhood. And that's what has changed at 311. So for people who have safety net issues, which I mean everything that can help you keep going, the 311 can be very helpful. Once again, I don't know how much of that data is going to be captured in, I don't know, just a good question. Any other questions? Yes.
Assemblyman Bing last year put out a whole bunch of open type stuff. The key one was construction permits. If anyone lives in the city and has construction next door, sometimes they do construction on Saturdays at 7 a.m. So construction and then health and safety, so that if an HHC hospital has a bunch of people one week who die of staff, that would come out and people could do something about it. So there's, those are two being built, and I'm sure he'd love to work.
Construction is huge. Yes.
So getting agencies to get the data out is one thing, but as you said, there are some entities that may be harder to get data from. There's other data that just isn't the city's data. And then there's a whole lot of other data which actually comes from citizens, some of which makes it into agency data, like, you know, a crime report, but others of which might be, this is actually how you get your street to get a stop sign, and like sort of a knowledge base from citizens. So I'm wondering if there's a role for city government in actually gathering the data from all those different sources, some of which probably couldn't be legislated, and putting it in a manageable form. I mean, that might be the kind of thing that a public advocate, I would think, might take on. But it seems like there's a whole role beyond just getting the data out.
As Craig knows, there's something called the COPIC, Commission on Public Information and something else. I can't remember what the T stands for. It is under the Public Advocate's Office. I was on it when I worked for Mark Green a long time ago. To be honest with you, COPIC is in the Public Advocate's Office. COPIC is mandated in the Charter. COPIC should be meeting on a regular basis. And COPIC has got mayor's appointments, borough president, I think public advocate, city council, etc. They're supposed to meet legally once a year, but this is the work they should be doing. And to be honest with you, I'm not getting into who's going to, I have no idea who's going to be the next public advocate, but I hope whomever it is will take, it would be the place to have kind of a constant evaluation of this law, but also pushing it to be sure what you're talking about takes place. I mean, even advisory groups of people to monitor in the way that was discussed here, because if you're not using the data, if you're using the data, you know what the problems are. If you're not using it, you don't know. And city agencies already have all the data, so they don't need to worry about utilizing it. And so I think COPIC should be something we'll bring up in the hearing, because I'm going to bring up. They should be the ones that take it the next step and be constantly sourcing the citizenry to see is this working or not. And of course, if we can bring in other agencies voluntarily, it would be great. I mean, not to include the housing authority, not to include DOE, not to include HHC, that's hard. But you know, they're not city agencies, so the mayor cannot mandate them, nor can the city council. In fact, nobody can, actually. The state, you know, and then of course, I assume that when the state comes on board, it will be part of the same, you can make it part of the same database, and you know, but the question is getting these agencies that are not part of anything. You got a question, then come back to it, go ahead.
I have just a general question. How many of your colleagues are familiar with open government initiatives? If they've ever heard of them? Are they for them?
I can tell you, I think the issue is two things. First of all, Jessica Lappin, who's on the east side, she's familiar with this issue and she's interested. Dan Garodnik, who is also from the east side, I know he's interested. The committee, Bill de Blasio is on the committee, James Sanders. There's a three or four. Eric Ulrich, who's from Queens, who's a new member, and Tish James. So
maybe
there's
10%?
Yeah, I would say 10%. However, the speaker is interested in this bill, it seems like, and that's what drives the council. So if the mayor is interested and the speaker is interested, the issue for us is making sure, as I keep saying over and over again, that it has enough, I hate to use the word meat and potatoes, but that's what I'm going to say, enough details to make it useful. Because you can have a bill, but it's not enough to make it useful for the public.
The other 90%, when they hear about it?
Another 90%, off the record, it doesn't matter. If the speaker is for it and I'm for it, it's irrelevant. They will vote.
That's good to hear.
That's how it works, just so you know. It doesn't matter. But so the question is for us to come up with something that makes sense for everybody here.
I guess my general question is, there institutional resistance to releasing data?
No. I think the issue would be the mayor and the cost factor, because in the end, the way legislation passes, and this is true in any legislative body, is that the legislative body and the administration get together. And they said, we'll take this, we won't take that. So it's more the negotiation, and we have to have enough on the table so that we're left with what we need, and not that it gets, as I said, watered down. So I don't think there'll be resistance. I think something will pass. I just want to be sure it's what we want that passes. Good question.
Yeah.
And then I'll come back to
Questions actually from Twitter.
Yes.
From Justin Massa of smart.org.
Okay.
So the question is about sharing location of wheelchair accessible curbs.
Oh, that's a great idea. It's the curb cut issue, and it's just accessibility to park, restaurant accessibility. I mean, that's like something that is not an agency's purview per se, because they don't have federal money. Just so you know, streets don't have to be ADA. They only get to be curb cut built when there's a new street. In other words, when you when you're building a new street or repaving a new street, the curb cut goes in. However, sometimes the curb cut isn't done properly, and sometimes, like I know on 86th Street and Broadway on the northeast corner, it's a terrible curb cut. But in order to fix it, you have to take the whole street out and start all over. So
I'm not sure if this came up.
Curb cut is a good idea. Go ahead.
In your session, but in San Francisco and in Oregon, they basically require public meeting notices to be placed on the web somewhere. And I think that this is a simple thing that says, not only does it need to be on the bulletin board or in the newspaper, it also needs to be on the web. I think that would be a great legal requirement.
I'll have to check, but there's
most are, but there's not.
I'm
going to
double check on that, okay.
I hope.
Because the city record, just so you know, the city record is now online, at least most of it, and the city record is the public notice of the city of New York.
That helps.
Yeah, so I believe, but let me check. Yes, go ahead.
How about a repository or at least a community board reports?
Okay.
And where community, because I know that, you know, there's very few that are really, really advanced of actually keeping their website up to date, but I know that there's some regulation about them even having websites, that they have to have websites, but...
Well, increasingly, just so you know, because I that was part of the bill that was passed about the official report. You also have another bill on getting access to 311 information for community boards, which they need more of.
Yeah.
And that's how we got some of the 311 data up. The issue there is, you know, there are some boards that are really just not sophisticated, and so do it is sort of taking over, or I would say building their websites. Without doing it, it often just doesn't happen. I mean, they only have three people in the office, just so you know, sometimes two, and sometimes they're not that sophisticated. But I hate to say, I don't know if they're all electronic, but I think it's a good attempt. Yes?
I was wondering if you consider that, like, after this legislation passes, which it will, there could be some kind of continuing framework for, like, open forums or a website to continually get feedback from the public.
That's a good idea. I mean, I think the way to do that is I'm always trying to think of institutional ways to do it, and one way might be through COPIC. So I think that might be one way to have an ongoing, because that's what COPIC, if you go to the city charter and you look up Commission on Public Information and Communication, for example, this, you know, what we're passing is something that they're supposed to be looking at, and they're supposed to have this as their mandate. But I appreciate that. You're absolutely right. Yes?
Just a quick question about the funding again. Is the city comptroller at all involved in the budgeting process for any of this open data?
Not really, because the comptroller, just so you know, is the auditor. So the comptroller doesn't have any budget input. He obviously runs the pension system and does the audits. So, you know, I suppose you could have some data about how many audits he's done, you know, and the material that's in his audits is often very helpful. Yes, you got to do the last question.
Yeah. Just one last comment, which was tacking on, in addition to public meetings, you know, posting those notices online, posting all RFIs and RFCs and RFPs.
Okay. I think they're supposed to be up now.
Do it held in RFC that closed, RFI that closed yesterday.
Okay.
That was never posted to their website.
That's what we
mentioned. Of the RFI. And a closed list of individuals who are invited to participate in that request for public inquiry.
That one, the broadband one? That's
yeah, there was broadband for low-income
housing. Oh, it's never on their website?
Never on their website.
Funny.
Wasn't on there in the beginning, wasn't on there on the end. I imagine it didn't appear in the middle.
So we put out an email about it. I thought it was.
Yes.
Okay.
I found out from Kunal.
Okay. All right.
And I've met with Dewitt several times. So.
Yeah, they know, they told me. Okay. Thank you very much. It's really exciting. And we look forward to seeing you on Monday. And thanks to Sam and to all of you. And thank you for including us. And thank you, Craig.
Quick announcement, there's a big herd of coffee out there in case you didn't notice. The Link Cube, which links you up to Austria, that same people over there, is working in the front atrium, and the open 311 API sprint is happening now out there.
And this room is a wiki to take a look at how state governments are using technology and social media best practices.
So have you had a couple of weeks?
Yeah.
Did you crack the heads over there against these guys?
I mean, what the hell is going on?
I picked something in the dimension.
Hey, welcome.
How are you?
Listen, I'm doing great.
I'm doing great.
I feel like there needs to be a chair.